Hey guys, I'm Em from the fashion and beauty blog, The Lipstick Fever. When I moved to London over a year ago, I felt like there weren't a ton of obvious resources for women moving abroad or moving cities. My biggest source of strength and growth for my big move was through the inspiring and amazing women from all over the world that I've been meeting. Now, I want to share those conversations with you. We're going to hear from female entrepreneurs, industry experts, and some major female badasses on a global level. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Big Move Podcast. I am your host, Em, from The Lipstick Fever, and today I am sitting here with Georgie Coleridge Cole. She is the founder and editor of Sheerlux, which is an online lifestyle magazine featuring news, views, edits, and opinions on all things relevant and desirable for the modern woman. Today, Sheerlux is one of the leading digital publications in the UK, with over 180,000 newsletter subscribers and myriad emerging and well-established brands and retailers as its commercial partners, from Net-a-Porter and Harrods to John Lewis and Topshop. They also have a highly successful podcast, as well as a three-pillar broadcast strategy, which includes the popular Sheerlux Behind the Scenes and the Sheerlux Show. Georgie, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
So exciting to be here in your office. I have to admit, I've never been to this part of town before. We're in Wandsworth. Am I saying it right?
We are. We're in Southwest London. I know. We are a bit of a... Well, it sounds further than it is. We're about 25 minutes from Oxford Circus, and I selfishly live in this neck of the woods. So here we are.
Ah, perfect. Well, there you go. Works out quite nicely. So a couple fun little icebreaker questions for you to kick things off.
Fire away.
All right. So what is your favorite destination for a proper holiday vacation, if you will?
Well, it's somewhere hot. I actually met my husband skiing, but my love for skiing has died as... No, I'm going to say it again. My love for skiing is, I don't know, it's not quite as it was. I like somewhere hot, somewhere where I can switch off, relax. I don't lie in the sun anymore. Somewhere where my kids can be entertained and where I can drink some rosé in the sun and read a book.
I'm so with you.
Somewhere far flung, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so with you. Need a hot destination. Yes.
So hotels, like, if I shout out for places like Anassa, like Verdura in Sicily, basically lovely hotels that welcome families, but
sure,
that are also a real treat for grown-ups as well.
Okay, like that. Okay, perfect. What is your favorite London coffee shop?
Well, I don't drink coffee. So, you know, you're nodding. I feel like you knew that already.
Well, recently I've had a lot of guests say that, and it's fair enough. So I suppose I should rephrase it to cafe or tea or coffee shop.
Well, if there was a Diet Coke shop, that would be my go-to. I gave it up for 6 months. And then my husband asked me if I felt any better. And I said no. And he said, well, I don't know why you've done it then. It used to give me so much pleasure. He always said I gave up Diet Coke for 6 months and then I realized actually I didn't feel any better for it. So I'm back on it. I've gone from three a day to one or two a day. Okay. So in answer to your question, I prefer a cocktail bar than a coffee shop.
Oh, right? I like it. Any favorites?
Oh, so many. Living in Southwest London, I go to Koji and Parsons Green quite a lot.
Okay.
They do great kind of Japanese, Asian fusion food, or 8 over 8, you know, those kinds of places. Someone that does me a good lychee martini.
Ooh, okay, I love that. Perfect. Okay, last icebreaker. Where is your favorite place to shop in London?
Probably the Brompton Cross area.
Okay.
I love sort of mid-market... French brands. I love mid-market designer brands. Mm-hmm. So I love Marge and Sandro and Eero and Bash and Zadig and Voltaire. They are all in the Brompton Cross area. So if I'm going to go shopping, I tend to go. I know I can park and I can usually walk away with a fair few things.
Okay, perfect. That's a really good tip. I've never been over that way. So I have to add it to my list. Perfect. So we'll kind of get into things, talk about your background. Mm-hmm. So you were born and bred in London.
I was.
Where exactly did you grow up and what was like life like growing up for you?
Well, it's not very exciting. You know, you said here we are you said here we are in Wandsworth. Well, I grew up in Wandsworth. Okay. My husband and I lived in Fulham for 5 years. And other than that, and now I'm back in Wandsworth. My mum is in Wandsworth. It's funny how as Londoners, you sort of have your patch. My Australian friend always used to joke that she would have to give me directions around London. so I'm a Southwest Londoner through and through. My father lived in Asia for about 10 years when I was, he moved there when I was 9 or 10. So okay. I spent quite a lot of my childhood in Hong Kong.
Which amazing.
Amazing, and I loved, but I was kind of, yeah, here in Southwest London or there. I actually went to boarding school when I was 11, out of London, which I loved. But yeah, I had a pretty happy childhood. London was quite different. Where I am now was quite different. It's changed a lot, but yeah, it was a great place to grow up.
That's so interesting about Hong Kong. Do you remember it as a child, or does it feel kind of distant?
I haven't been back for a long time. I loved the smell. I loved the humidity. I still love if I go to Asia, you know, when you step off the plane and that humid heat just hits you. And I'm like, oh, I love it. I mean, it's terrible for my hair, but just got to scrape it back. But actually, yeah, my husband and I always, our plan actually was always to move to Singapore. I remember when London won the Olympics and lots of Londoners were a bit unsupportive about it, shall we say.
Sure.
It then was a huge success and we loved having the Olympics, but at the time we were all a bit like, oh, do we need to spend that much money on the Olympics?
Yeah.
And I remember we said, oh, we won't be here anyway, we'll be in Singapore. And we got quite close. We looked into it quite heavily, and then actually I started my business and the rest is history, and so here we are.
Sure.
And it's never happened, which is probably something I'll always regret. I would love to have lived an expat life as an adult.
Sure.
I remember growing up in Hong Kong, going to parties, age sort of 13, and there being 13-year-olds there and 18-year-olds there and 30-year-olds there and 6-year-olds and 18-year-olds, and
yeah,
everyone just got on and it made my parents very carefree. The way you grew up, the way you interacted with other adults, it just definitely really enriched you, I think, as a child, being exposed to all those different age groups.
Yeah, absolutely.
And cultures. I love the food. As I said, I love the climate. I think I'll always be sad that I've never done it, but equally, sometimes life takes you places, sometimes it doesn't.
And totally.
I think you can be happy in lots of different places.
Definitely. I was going to say life happens, and that obviously happened for you.
Yeah.
So you're based here with your husband and your 3 kids. Mm-hmm. What do you love most about London life?
I'm very much a Londoner. People often say, I guess I'm at that age, my eldest child's 8, and quite a lot of friends of ours in the last few years have moved out of London. You know, you get to that stage. I mean, you get to that stage where you go, do we stay? Do we go? We will definitely stay. I'm not very good at not doing things evening after evening after evening. I think from what I know, weekends in the country are like wildly busy and social, but it's quite quiet during the week. And right. I quite like a fast paced life. I also like to just get in the car and drive to a shop or get in an Uber and go for a drink at the last minute. I don't know. I love the life. I love stuff going on around me. Yeah.
It's dynamic in London.
I get the country. Lovely. I think for me, I'd probably be a bit. For me, I'd probably be a bit bored.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, cool. So kind of getting into your career background a bit. So when and where did your career kind of really start for you? Did you have an editorial background, or did you always love everything fashion and beauty?
I didn't have an editorial background, which definitely didn't make it easy. I left university and went to work for Coty Beauty Company. I worked in marketing there. I was quite hungry to progress, and they acquired the P&G. They acquired the Unilever Prestige business. I remember my CEO, who I got on really well, was saying, "I'm afraid that promotions are on hold for 6 months." And I was really impatient to earn more money. I was really motivated by earning my own money, and so I left and went into property marketing, which was not for me. And it was there. I actually toyed with personal shopping for a little while, also decided that that was not for me. And it was there, working in property marketing, that I decided that, having been someone that people always used to come to and say, "Oh, where did you get that? And oh, I love that top." And I'd say, "It's from H&M." And they'd be like, "Whoa, how did you find that?" I think also my experience in Hong Kong, I used to spend, I used to go for the holidays. I used to go for kind of a month at a time, and I just used to spend days and days trawling around markets looking for the kind of little gems that there were. So yeah, I was always that person that people used to ask advice for, I guess. I thought I'd write a book on shopping, and a book became a website, and then that became the idea for Sherlock's. It started as a directory of the best places to shop online, and then over however many years, it became about editorial and content was really at the heart of the business. But in answer to your question, no, I didn't have an editorial background, and that definitely didn't make it easy for me at the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And were you always that motivated and always kind of had that hungry drive you kind of mentioned?
Yeah, I think so. My dad has amazing stamina. We always laugh. My siblings do as well. The Coleridge Cole stamina is quite strong. My father had a very good work ethic, and I was not the brightest at school, but I worked really hard. I remember one of my teachers saying, she was like, well, you're going to pass your English A-level. And I was like, whoa. And I did extra essay after, and I literally would go into my, I was at boarding school, I went to my room, and I'd every night I'd like write an extra essay. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say I got an A, and she told me that she thought I'd at least get a D. So I guess, you know, I'm not naturally the most academic person, but yeah, I've always, I used to get home from school and do my homework. The first thing I did was my homework. Like, I was like, I'm going to get my homework out there. I used to write my thank you letters on Christmas Day when I was little. I remember my stepmom I was little going, you could leave those till tomorrow, you know?
Very dedicated child.
Yes. So I think, yeah. Yeah, I've always been a hard worker.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so kind of looking back on the early days of launching Sherlock's, mm-hmm. what were like some of the biggest challenges that you encountered in kind of getting your company off the ground?
Well, going back to the point of not having had an editorial background, I had no contacts in the industry. I mean, none. None of my girlfriends worked in fashion or in publishing. So that was definitely... that made it pretty tough. I was literally knocking on the door. Also just the whole concept of digital publishing. You know, there were blogs around, but there weren't other online magazines. There was Daily Candy. Do you remember Daily Candy?
Yeah, of course, yes.
But that was just one email a day, and that was it. So trying to get people to understand what the concept was challenging. People still come up to me today and say, how do you make money? I'm like, we're just like a magazine online. It's quite simple. But people really struggled to get their head around it. And it was also at a time where retailers, brands were just not prepared to spend money mm-hmm. advertising online. They were like, our money goes into print. That is it. We will work on what you would call like a cost per acquisition only. Mm-hmm. So like no win, no fee almost.
Sure.
So... it was tough in the early days, myriad reasons.
Sure.
It was just such a new territory.
Yeah, absolutely. We were essentially starting from scratch mm-hmm. with like exactly. no network, and it was also brand new because this was back in 2007.
Mm, exactly.
So it's like you have to think back to that time period too.
I know, we forget how nascent, you know, digital publishing yeah, was at that time.
Definitely. So you guys have had such success over here in the UK. Are there a few key things that you think have really attributed to that success in comparison to maybe some of the other digital platforms and online magazines out there?
I think in everything we do and we put out, we question whether it's interesting for the reader. There are a lot of digital publications that have created content purely for SEO, for search engine optimization. If people listening who don't know what that means so that a feature ranks highly on Google, and that's great. That might get you lots of page views of an article, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you had the right people viewing that article, or a particularly good demographic of person viewing that article, or that there's any kind of real affiliation between you as a publisher and them as someone reading it. So I think, yeah, from the very beginning, it's always been about, is that interesting for the person that's going to read this? We've always also put real focus on the visual. People, you know, in the very, very early days, and the site looked so, God, I look back now and I'm like, oh my God, did we actually put that out? Looks so dated. But even then, you know, the imagery, I spent so much time making sure mm-hmm. the imagery was appealing, and people used to say, oh, it's shit, it's like a really nice place to be at lunchtime. And so I think the combination of really caring about our reader and what they're going to get and this sort of aesthetic has worked in our favor, and that's always really been our mission, you know, to put them in touch with great products and services in a sort of beautiful way.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds so simple, but it's such key advice, I think. And I think even from like the other flip side of like being on the content or the blogger, the influencer side, it's all about the audience. Mm. So it's interesting to hear too, that from your side, that was like so key.
Mm. I think as well, you know, in the early days, we raised a very little bit of money after about 6 months, but I did not have any savings. I gave up my job, and my husband, who didn't have very much money then either, supported me, and we lived a very, you know, simple life. Sure. But you know, we had to make money as a business, and from the beginning, I think commercially we were quite savvy about the fact that we were a business and we needed to make money, and we definitely prioritized that, I would say.
Yeah.
Quite early on.
Definitely. Do you have any kind of one or two pieces of advice for someone looking to launch their own company?
I would say it's a time, it's comes down to, well, look, you've got to have a good product. You've got to test the market somehow and be sure that there is room in the market for your product. You don't need to reinvent the Hoover. In fact, sometimes it's easier if there's already a category and you're just inventing a better Hoover. I remember the founder of Propercorn saying that Tyrrells was launching their popcorn just as she was launching Propercorn, and initially she was like, God, this is a disaster. But actually what it meant was the category was opening up, and that was therefore a good thing. So I think you've got to know that you've got a good product. You've got to do some good market research. You've got to not ask your friends, because they're going to be too polite to say, I think that's crap. And you know, and then I think it's just being really prepared for hard work and it taking time, because however long you think it's going to take, it's going to take even longer.
Yeah, I'm sure. So I'm curious, what is your business and your leadership style kind of like at Sheerlux and with your teams?
Oh God, I saw that question. I was like, don't ask my team that question. We just did appraisals, and we did 360 appraisals for the senior team. And I was like, can we not put me in that? Because I don't want to know what they're going to say to me. I mean, chaotic, I'm not gonna lie. You know, it's really busy here. You know, we're a team of almost 30, and that's still not enough people, and we're adding to the team all the time, we're recruiting all the time. But as a growing business, you never have enough people.
Sure.
You're always trying to do more. We're trying to stay ahead of the game. I was saying to you, tomorrow we launch SL Man. I'm also living in a building site. I have 3 children. You know, my life is quite chaotic. The Fair. Irony is, I used to be the most organized. I was that person that did their homework and wrote their thank you letters on Christmas Day and had a list for everything. And I'm probably quite chaotic, but I try, and I think I bring energy to the team, and and hopefully that's inspiring. I apologize for my chaos, but yeah, I think energy. I think you want them to feel that even though they're working really hard and you might be throwing things at them the last minute, that it's exciting and that they're on a journey. And I think my senior team, I think everyone here, you know, everyone here is a really key part in the machine and is contributing to what we're achieving every day. So
of course,
hopefully that makes up a little bit for the chaos. We try and share the highlights. We now have, you know, we now have a monthly full house meeting where we share, different departments share the highlights and the successes and exciting things that are happening. And I think that helps everyone feel a part of a part of it, and hopefully lets me get away with a bit of chaos.
Fair enough. I mean, and on the note of chaotic and juggling and, you know, family and work life, do you sort of rely on organizational tools, husband, other family members for help? Like, what does juggling ultimately kind of look like for you?
sending myself a lot of emails. That is my way of not forgetting things.
My husband and I do that too.
Do you? Yeah. If it's, I know.
To ourselves, to each other.
Yeah.
Like.
Well, we're the same. We are the same. We invite each other to things in our diaries. And I send myself emails. I think I got into work this morning to 12 emails I'd sent myself. And they are things like order Otto more name tapes to, you know, something far more crucial to the business. Sure. Do I have any tools? No. A lot of WhatsApps with various groups of people. I mean, in terms of help with my children, look, it's got easier when I started the business and I had my first daughter. As I said, she's now 8. And, you know, times were harder. And I've said this before, I used to run up the hill so that my nanny could go on time, because if I was late, I'd have to pay her more money. And,
sure,
you know, it definitely gets easier. I don't have parents that sort of do a regular day or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It kind of hasn't worked for them. I invested in a nanny quite early on as opposed to nursery, because I kind of think, mm-hmm, that nursery can be amazing, but I live locally and I wanted to be home. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone has to sort of do it their own way. It gets easier as your career goes on, hopefully. But,
yeah,
you know, for me, I have a great nanny housekeeper, and I have a great assistant here. But, you know, I didn't have any of those things when I started. I couldn't afford them. So it's blimmin' hard. But I do think as women, we are very good at spinning plates. And
yeah, you get really good at multitasking.
Really good. I interviewed somebody last week and she said, I think women are like swans. And she said, on the top of the water, we're very calm, but underneath, we're just like paddling.
Yeah, and I feel that.
And someone also said to me the other day, she said, you can't do it all. You just got to peel away layers of the, you know, peel things off and just do that thing and do that thing and do that thing. And don't think about all the millions of things you've got to do. Just get on and do them. And
right.
It's hard. It's hard, isn't it? No one has the magic answer, but, you know, that's life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of want to dig into your maternity leave and your experiences there. And because I know I just shared this with you, but so selfishly, I want to know because I am pregnant. And it's the first time I'm getting to really like dig into this and talk about this on my podcast. By the time it comes out, it will be on my social and very apparent that I am. But I'm curious, like, what did maternity leave look like for you while you were at Sheerlux? Kind of looking back at that time, were there any like really big hurdles that you went through?
Well, first of all, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Exciting.
Thank you.
You look very well.
We're trying here.
Well, amazing news. What happy news. Literally, the life starts now. I mean, great news. As far as maternity, it's hard when it's your own business. I tried to take 3 months out and I had, I didn't have any childcare set up when I had childcare starting when she was 12 weeks old. So for the first 12 weeks, it was just me and her. I was quite big on routine because I knew that I needed to fit work in. So I was like, I need to not be up all night, every night. So I was quite, it's not for everybody, but for me, it gave me the freedom to then be able to know she was going to sleep 2 hours at lunch and I could work those 2 hours at lunch. So I was quite big on routine. And then I had three members of my team, my kind of at that time, my three most senior members of the team who would come to my house because my house was near the office. I remember having quite a traumatic labor with my first, and I had such bad stitches having to lie on the sofa with them sitting in my sitting room. And I remember thinking, oh my God, this is so unprofessional. But you just do what you have to do. So with her, I took 12 weeks. And then I think I was here 3 days. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you're always working. You're always juggling.
Yeah.
It's really hard with my second. With my son, I came back, I think, within 3 days, literally.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I had my nanny already mm-hmm. from my first. And then...
You were kind of set up.
Yeah.
If you will, in
a way. It was great. And actually, now I'd forgotten. But I remember what I did with Otto. I came in every day from 10 until... 2 or something like that, and that was great because I was able to say to everybody, these are my hours that I'm in, unless it's really urgent, please don't bother me, but I'll be in from 10 till 2. Mm-hmm. And you can, we can do it then. Sure. So it kind of gave me more freedom because it meant at 2 o'clock, that was it until the next day.
Right, right.
And then with my youngest, who is 2, so that wasn't that long ago, I was out of the office for a few months actually, mm-hmm. and I worked from home, but not too much, and it was really lovely. But, mm-hmm. you know, I couldn't have done that first time around. I sure. think you manage.
Yeah.
They sleep lots.
Right.
I used to put Coco in a baby bouncer in front of baby TV. She loved it.
Yeah.
It hadn't done her any harm. She's, you know.
Right.
She's not a telly addict, but she used to sit there in front of, like, you know, whatever they are. I can't remember what they're called now.
Yeah.
The train things that drive around. Anyway. And yeah, the first 6 months it's quite easy because they can't move, so you can just pop them on a playmat with their toys and
right.
You know, you muddle through, you find your way, and it's in us. We're strong. Us yeah. women are strong.
Yeah, totally.
We make it work.
It's funny you say that because my husband said to me, he's like, you're not going to be able to even answer an email for, you know, weeks, months, whatever. And I'm like, Nick, they sleep. Like, and I'm going to be awake. Like you said, you make it work. If it's a priority, if getting back to someone is important, you know, you figure it out.
Yeah. I think their hardest age is like probably 9 months, you know, when they start to crawl and they're on the move. And
yeah,
then you
totally.
Like literally can't take your eyes off them for a second. But in the early days, it's just the sleep deprivation. It's a killer. Yeah. Someone said to me once, no one ever died from lack of sleep. And you will sleep again. You just have to tell yourself, I will go to bed tonight and I will get some sleep. And I can do this. It's only tiredness and mind over tiredness. That's what I used to tell myself.
Right, right. Like it will improve. Do you have any kind of general tips for women who are on maternity leave or about to go on leave who might be worried about like losing themselves or just kind of getting off track with their career when the baby comes?
Well, I mean, I haven't worked in a corporate and experienced that myself. I mean, I know there are days where you can return to work now throughout your maternity leave, keep in touch days. I think that's really valuable to say, hello, everybody. I'm still here. I'm coming back to this job. So don't you think about kind of shafting me. I think that sends a really positive message. So I think the introduction of those keep in touch days for women, and obviously you're paid for them. You can only do a certain amount. Is it 6? Can't remember exactly. I think that's really valuable. I think other than that, I would say, unless you really don't want a career or it really doesn't work for whatever your personal situation, I would really encourage women to go back to work. I think, you know, when you have your first baby, it's so incredible. The love and the emotion and the bond. And you're like, whoa, nothing in the world is ever, ever, ever going to be better than this. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what we're put on the planet to do.
Yeah.
And it is the most incredible thing as women, human beings, we experience. So I think perhaps it could be easy to think that you're never going to want anything else in your life, but as your children get older and then they go to school, you know, I guess I'm at an age now where there are some mothers that are like, right, I want to go back to work now, but it's been 8 years perhaps since they have been in the workplace, so those original jobs perhaps aren't an option anymore.
Yeah,
there are definitely ways to get back in, but maybe you have to, you know, you have to take a bit of a pay cut. I think it's, you know, a lot of the time it comes down to the numbers, and parents will sit down and they'll add up the numbers and they'll say, well, for an extra 100 quid a week, which is what I would make if after childcare, it's just not worth it. Mm-hmm. I think you need to think of the long game. And actually, you know, 10 years down the line, they're going to be at school. You're not going to be paying that childcare. And actually you might want that in your life.
Yep.
So I think it's thinking of the longer term impact on you as an individual. Obviously children fill up your time and are very needy when they're little, but I would urge women to think really carefully before they let a great career go.
I think that's really practical advice. I mean, and it makes a lot of sense. It's right. The longer you're out, the harder it's going to be to get back.
But you can get back in, and there are loads of other options and loads of other things you can do and other trainings. And I've got a couple of friends training to be a nutritionist now. I think that's an amazing thing you can do. And there are, you know, women getting involved in all sorts of businesses. So there are ways and means.
Yeah, absolutely. So upon kind of like getting back into work life, let's say after your first child, what is your biggest tip of advice for like a brand new mom?
Say that again. Sorry.
After kind of diving back into work life, after you've had maybe like your first child, is there like a tip of advice or something that you could offer to like a brand new mom?
I think, oh, so difficult. It's so difficult because, I mean, I get in trouble for saying things like this. I'm too outspoken. But for me, it's about routine. Mm-hmm. For me, routine with your children gives you freedom.
Sure.
So for me, I'm not going to go any further on that one because I'll get in trouble. Yeah. You can leave that in. That's fine.
Yeah, that's
but you know, I would say routine. Mm-hmm. In terms of work, I did something with my nanny when my first was little. I introduced these flexi hours. So I had 2 flexi hours a week where I paid her on top of her set hours. So let's say she worked 8 to 5 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I always used to find that, like, I always used to find getting home such a stress. Mm-hmm. And I would literally, as I said, be running up the hill. So I introduced these flexi hours, which meant if I was sitting at my desk and I was on a call that I really wanted to have, mm-hmm. or I had an email that I really wanted to get out and I was going to feel a bit stressed by not having done so, mm-hmm. I knew I had these flexi hours that I'd paid for. They were set. And it meant I could just text her and say, I'm going to be an extra half an hour without always doing the maths.
Sure.
Because otherwise, so that would be a tip. Have a couple of additional hours that you have in the bank.
Yes.
So that if as a working mother, you know, and I think, you know, appeal to your employer. I think most, well, I'd like to, I can't speak for all employers. I think certainly here, I'm very open to mothers who say, I'm going to be late, I've got a music thing to go to or an assembly or whatever, you know that those mothers are going to make up the time. And and I think being open with an employer.
Just having like open communication between you. Yeah.
Maybe I'm living in a dream world, but you know, give it a go.
Yeah, sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. So I want to talk about Sheerlux in more detail. So who predominantly makes up Sheerlux's core readers, core audience? Like, what do readers mainly come to Sheerlux.com for?
People say we're like the cooler in the know friend. So we curate life for our readers, and that can be across anything from fashion and beauty to careers, to interiors, to travel, to how to get stains out of a carpet, to, you know, where to get your clothes tailored, to tips on parenting, to what's the best contraception, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we are their guide to life. We're there in their no friend. And we are talking to women that are interested in life, are interested in style, that are, you know, are wanting to live their life to their fullest. And in terms of the age range, it literally ranges from girls in their early 20s through to women, you know, of every single age.
Yeah.
But, you know, what unites them is this, you know, interest in life.
Yeah, I love that. Has there been like a piece of content or two that comes to mind that maybe went viral or you think like really resonated with your readers?
I think, and I'm not just saying this to push this, but I think, you know, we work with all sorts of brands. We, you know, as you said in your introduction, we work with Net-a-Porter, we work with Topshop. What unites the women that we talk to is that they like nice things, and everyone's idea of luxury or purchasing power is different. You know, some of our readers buy all their whole wardrobe in Net-a-Porter. Some of them treat themselves to a top for a special birthday. What unites them is great things. What we love is when we get a brand that perhaps our readers aren't as au fait with, and we can then shoot that brand and bring that brand alive in a really Sheerlux way. Next is a prime example of a campaign we did recently, and it's been, I think, the top performing commercial story we've run ever. And we took several of their autumn winter looks, starred them, shot them on one of our team, worked with a photographer, videographer, and created this incredible content that we are so proud of, that performs so well. So I think we almost love it when we get something tricky. But equally, we, you know, we can write a story on how to de-bubble your cashmere. And in fact, what did go viral was this handheld steamer, which we actually named Viv. It became so iconic that we named the steamer Viv.
And oh my gosh, I need Viv in
everybody was buying Viv. Well, Viv is portable. She's very reasonable. She's available on Amazon and she's an absolute godsend.
Okay.
So it really is, it's so varied.
Yeah,
so
it's kind of like across the board.
One thing. Plus, we publish 10 articles at least every day. So it's very difficult to think of, you know, the one. It is, we start again every day, you know, it's quite a machine.
Yeah. No, that's so interesting though. Viv, we'll include a link to Viv so people can check it out. So you are such a fashionista as well. I was stalking your personal Instagram. So what are going to be your kind of fall and autumn staples in your wardrobe this year?
Oh, this year. Well, I have already bought some leather culottes, which I am thrilled with. In fact, they're H&M £200 real leather. They have sold out, so keep an eye in case they come back.
Okay.
But, you know, leather skinnies, we always talk about leather skinnies, but it's definitely the year of the leather culotte.
I agree.
Houndstooth is huge this season. Mm-hmm. It comes back every winter, but it's really, it's really good this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Some good knee-high boots.
Yes, 100%.
You know, It's a funny autumn winter. I mean, big puffer coats, lots of great knits. We think the trends change every year, but you know, if you buy well, they actually don't. And
it's so true.
Know, there's such a focus on sustainability now, mm-hmm. and so it's so great to see that actually what we were featuring a year ago is still around. Yeah. So actually, you know, as an individual, I'm really consciously trying to buy less, buy better, and you know, hopefully our readers are doing the same.
Right.
I think we're all doing the same a bit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of reinventing, because I'm kind of with you. Like, knee-high boots were really popular last year. The Western boot was also really popular. It's back again. Leopard print, I feel like it never really goes away, kind of like houndstooth. So I'm complete with you.
And you need a knitted two-piece, that's what you need this year.
Ooh, yes, a knitted two-piece. Mm. I've been seeing them and I love them. Mm. Okay, so how about beauty trends? Are you seeing anything that you think is going to be super major for fall winter?
I mean, the biggest news in beauty at the moment has got to be Victoria Beckham launching her collection. That's mm-hmm. pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Gosh, she's smart. It's a great collection, what we've seen so far. I don't know. I don't get too... No, I don't know if I'm the best person to answer on beauty.
Yeah, no, that's fair.
Are you minimal
with your beauty?
Beauty is so innovative. It is so fast moving. The advancements in different formulations is incredible. You know, the different kinds of foundations you can get now, from mm-hmm. a full coverage to a dewy to a matte to a light mm-hmm. to a... you know, illuminating to it's amazing. In fact, Laura Mercier has just relaunched her sort of iconic illuminating foundation, which I used years and years and years ago, and mm-hmm. it's back and it's even better. You know, beauty's moving all the time. You know, new mascara ones, new primers, new skincare, the developments in moisturizer and skin cell therapy, and you know, it's incredible. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
When it comes to color, I'm not too experimental, shall we say. I believe in a bit of fake tan, some good eyebrows, and you know, a bit of a smoky eye. Other than that,
keeping it simple.
It's quite simple. Yeah,
I like that. I'm with you there. Do you have any diehard beauty products? Like, can't leave the house without.
I am obsessed with Sèche Feet top coat. I am obsessed with two things. My two kind of ride or die Clarins Eclaminute lip product in number 5. Mm-hmm. Such a great shade of pink. Suits mm-hmm. everybody. Very subtle.
Okay.
And it would be Sèche Feet top coat.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, I bang on and on. You think I was sponsored by Sèche Feet. I am not. This is not an ad. But I'm a bit of a nail obsessive. I am wearing right now Essie's 5th Avenue, which...
Your nails look amazing. I mean,
I'm a bit of a nail obsessive. As a teenager, I used every single day after school, every single day I do my nails. I'm kind of obsessed. It's my thing. I feel like I'm not wearing a bra when I haven't done my nails. But
I'm so with you.
I either wear Essie Fifth Avenue.
Okay.
Or ballet slippers, which is the kind of nudie.
Okay.
One of those two. Okay. With sesh feet on the top. And the beauty of sesh feet. I do my nails myself. People always ask me where I get them done. With three children and
good
work.
For you. I don't know how you have time.
Well, I don't have time to go and have them. I would love to go and have them done. I never have time. But at 10 o'clock, I did these last night at 10 o'clock. Put sesh feet on top.
Okay.
No, there's not a smudge in sight.
I mean, I need to buy that immediately.
As my witness, you can see, can't you?
Yeah, no, they look amazing.
So
they
sesh
look
feet like is very strong. It's very, okay. very, very strong. But it dries your nails in like seconds.
Okay. Amazing. We'll include a link to that in the show notes.
And Rodial. I'm a big fan of Rodial products, actually. They do some great smoky eye palettes. They do some great foundations.
Yes, we just had Maria on the podcast.
Oh, did you?
She's literally going to be probably the episode before you. So that's exciting.
Oh, well, there you go. You can thank me later, Maria.
Perfect. Perfect segue. So can you tell us a little bit more about the Sheer Luxe podcast, kind of what the premise, and then maybe if there's been like one or two kind of most memorable guests for you?
So, we have several different podcasts. We have our, what we call our highlights podcast, which is, it's our chat podcast. So it's four members of the team. Sometimes they have a guest and it's basically, it's a bit of a giggle. It's a bit of a debrief on what anyone's watching or reading on stuff that we've written about on the site. So if we've written about zebra print, we'll talk about zebra print, or if we've written about places to go on holiday or how to deal with your spots, whatever. It's just, it's good girly chat. It's a great one if you're going for a run and you want to pass the time. Yeah. So that's our highlights podcast. Then we have our success stories podcast, which is where I interview a successful woman. Most recently, I have interviewed Philippa Lepley, bridal designer Philippa Lepley, Chrissy Rucker, founder of The White Company. We've interviewed Anina Bing, Emma Bridgewater, Amanda Wakely, Maria Hatzistephanis, the founder of ClassPass. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could go on and on and on. Nina Campbell, interior designer legend. I'm really proud of it. There was nothing like it in the UK. And it's probably the part of my job I enjoy the most is meeting incredible women with amazing stories to tell. So if you haven't listened to it and you're listening, check it out. And then we also have The Brief, which is a weekly 20-minute podcast which sums up all the news and current affairs you need to know about.
Because okay, I love this.
The Week is a great print edition. Mm-hmm. I used to get it. I used to struggle to get through it. And I was like, hang on, we need an email here every morning that just sums up what's happening in the news. Yeah. So we launched that. It comes out at 7:15 in the morning.
Okay.
And it takes 5 minutes to read and it will tell you what is going on in the world from Brexit to the weather to, you know, news all around the world. Basically what's been in the press the day before and that morning.
Okay.
And then that has also now been summarized into a weekly podcast.
Okay, cool.
And then we also do In Conversation with podcasts. Lots. We started our podcast quite early on, actually. Yeah. And it's done so well. I mean, I love podcasts. I listen to them. I listen to podcasts. I tell you this. I listen to podcasts on 1.5 times speed because I can get through them quicker.
So I listen to, I think, on maybe one. I think my husband listens on that next level. I'm like, how do you do that? It's so fast, but it's very efficient, right?
Well, your husband is the only, other than myself, is the only other person I know that does that.
He does. These people sound like they're like going a mile a minute. And I'm like, how can you think about it? It's crazy.
Mine says to me, he says, only you. He tells me, he calls me a fast woman. He says, only you would be listening to podcasts. I've got a lot to get through.
So yeah, no, it's true. You want to get through. And some episodes are long. So I just want to get it done. Whenever I'm reading something or listening to something, I want to get on to the next thing.
I also think they sound better because they sound more high energy.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. So anything exciting for Sheer Luxe coming up? I know you mentioned Sheer Luxe Men, but yeah, anything you want to share?
Yeah, well, SL Man launches tomorrow.
Exciting.
We have been talking about this for a long time. We recruited a great girl out of Harrods Man. She was fashion editor of menswear at Harrods for 8 years. She's now come on board to run SL Man.
Amazing.
And it is a twice weekly email featuring six stories from where to buy the best white t-shirts, mm-hmm. what to buy in Zara, what navy blazers to buy, through to grooming, through to what to watch on Netflix, mm-hmm. Travel, careers, basically Sherlock's for men. And people have been saying to me for years and years, why don't you do this for men? So anyway, finally we're doing it.
So exciting.
It's very exciting. You know, fingers crossed, men will like it too.
Yeah, I think they're going to love it. So as kind of a last question and wrapping things up, are there any resources, whether it's books or podcasts or anything kind of specific that you love that help you stay motivated or that you find inspiration from outside of the Sheer Looks podcast? Of course.
Of course. Of course. No, I'm trying to think. I love How I Built This.
Yeah.
With Guy Raz. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it's a great one.
I love James O'Brien, Full Disclosure. I mean, Desert Island Discs, it's nothing new. For me, it's all about interviews. That's...
Yeah.
You know, I know there's lots of great series, but I like listening mm-hmm. to individuals and hearing their stories and you know, conversations.
I'm completely with you, and that's why I started mine, so...
Well... Congratulations.
Thank
you. You'll have to come on ours next.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, perfect place to end. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to be here. This was an awesome episode. But before you go, where can everybody keep up with you and find you? And then, you know, Sherlocks.com and all of that jazz.
Well, Sherlocks.com. I'm at Georgie Courage Cole on Instagram. We are on YouTube at Sherlocks. Podcast, you name it, we're there.
Amazing. Thank you guys so much for listening. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, and we will catch you next time. Bye. Thanks, everyone.